Go to Matthew chapter 10.
Thanks for sharing that.
Oh, yeah.
You going to tell.
Okay, can
we not talk
then? Yeah. Let's don't make a Bible study out of it. In chapter 9:37, it says, "The harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest." That's a televangelistic gold mine. And it justifies a lot of people sending people out into the... Harry, if you're not going to listen. I'm going to have to send you out.
Okay.
All right. So pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he'll send forth laborers into his harvest. I know I used to read that and it was scary to me because I thought I would be sent forth into the harvest. I didn't want to do that. It was because then I would have to go out and witness with tracts. And I didn't want to do that. And it was just like I would be some kind of person I never respected. I hated those people going out around with tracts. Fortunately, that's not what's required, to go out with tracts.
Take film
strips. Take what? Take film strips. It's much easier. Show a film for Christ. But as we have come to understand, it's wherever you go. Either you'll make disciples or you won't. You will speak what God gives you to speak or you won't. And you'll speak it when he gives it to you or you won't. And it thankfully, it's his work. But prayerfully, his work is taking place in you and it's happening. And there's always you're always on the edge of condemnation. Should I speak to this person? Did I speak right? Did I represent Christ? I mean, your head goes into that whole mode, which you can guarantee is from the Antichrist, the one who's trying to put on a fair show in the flesh. And that's to be repented of. Because that's
the key thing is that people will ask and they don't.
Yeah.
Curious about what the resurrection that they see.
Yeah. We touched on the drama of this last night in our meeting, where we talked about the forgiveness was really the issue, and that the example was out of Les Miserables, where the Jean Valjean, the hero of the story, had stolen some silver from a priest's home who had helped him. And then when he left, the police caught him and they brought him back and they were going to arrest him. They wanted the priest to press charges, and the priest said, "Oh, no, no, I gave him that silver. In fact, he left some behind here. You forgot one or two pieces," and gave it to him. And it was so powerful that it changed his entire life. And that level of forgiveness of those who have wronged you is about the only thing that will communicate to the heart, the heathen world. And I even had terrible dreams about that last night. I'm not even going to tell you. It was so bad, the dreams. It was so bad. Huh? You want to hear it? I dreamed that that I was in this group of people or whatever, and they were punishing these children by cutting their tongues out. And I was trying to get them to stop, but I wouldn't risk my life to get them to stop. I just didn't want them to do it. And I even followed them down. There was one little girl, and I especially didn't want them to do it to her, but they pulled her tongue out and cut it off. It was just horrible, and I thought, well, this will go away, and it didn't go away, and I kept over and over and over, the same thing kept happening. And the only place I finally got to, I mean, that's about as horrible a thing as could come into my brain, I thought. And the only thing that stopped it was to forgive the people who did it. In this scenario in my head was to go ahead and forgive them. And then there was peace. And I guess it speaks to two issues. Number one, if there's not this depth of forgiveness taking place in you, then you haven't repented. The cross hasn't gone deep enough. You know, we're always talking the cross goes deeper still. We hate to even think that it would need to be in that dimension, but if it doesn't go all the way, then we're still a part of this world, and we're still living by our sensory perceptions and thinking that things ought to be the way we think they ought to be. But the gospel has always been extremely violent, and there's always been bloodshed around it. And I guess my point here is just how deep is forgiveness gone in you? At what point do you cut it off? Say, no more. Ronnie had talked about it, and Harry joked about it this morning. Ronnie got some lady almost confronted him on the sidewalk, wouldn't move over as they were walking by, and some little thing. And he got real angry. Took a whole Bible study before he could forgive her.
When did this happen?
Yesterday.
Wednesday.
And so, I mean, that's a small thing. Somebody wouldn't move over on the sidewalk. But the forgiveness, you know, it just didn't come automatic. And he had to hear something spiritually powerful to break loose and be able to forgive. But then there's freedom.
You know, something you just said, you described the dream that you thought was too hard to tell. I mean, it is a terrible image, but it wasn't too horrible to tell. It's a very important, revealing kind of a dream.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
And then you went on to say, and there's so much violence and bloodshed associated with the gospel. And we've said that many, many times. And it just dawned on me that sentence implies that apart from the gospel, there isn't all kinds of violence and bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. I mean, this world is a world of violence and bloodshed. People may be walking past each other on the sidewalk, not actually striking out and killing each other anymore, but they are walking past each other on the sidewalk and striking out and killing each other.
Yeah.
I'm not unique. I know that. And what's in me frequently is World War III.
Yeah.
Carnage. So it's not... Yeah. I'm going to stop thinking of the gospel as such a violent, bloody thing. It's not...
Yeah.
I mean, it is, but it's not...
It is, but it's not unique thing. From the whole thing, yeah. Yeah.
The locus of violence and blood.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that's worth.
No, that's good. Well, let's read some of this. In chapter 10, it says, when Jesus called unto him his 12 disciples, he gave them power against unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all manner of sickness and all manner of disease. Then it names the apostles. Go into 5. And these 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, go not into the way of the Gentiles, and into any city of the Samaritans enter you not, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out devils. Freely you have received, freely give. Provide neither gold nor silver nor brass in your purses, nor scrip for your journey, neither two coats, neither shoes nor staves, for the workman is worthy of his meat. That power hasn't changed, and that power is ours. I mean, that's our birthright in the gospel, to heal the sick, cleanse lepers, raising the dead. I don't know about raising the physical dead, I haven't seen that, but you can certainly raise people from their own personal death And it's just by this very thing of going and by preaching, by teaching, by talking, by being, by giving.
We know the spiritual meaning of leprosy. All men are leprous anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's alone, ringing their bell, saying, "Don't come near me."
Yeah, don't come near me. That's funny. I forgot about that. We talked a lot about lepers, but I'd never thought about the ringing the bell and don't come near me. We try and keep people away. Everybody does. Cast out devils. Freely you have received, freely give. And it's done. Provide neither gold nor silver or brass in your purses. God is providing everything. And so you don't need this stuff. This is the stuff of the world that we think as worldly people we have to have it to survive. But if you know you're with God, you just go. And you don't worry about the stuff. You don't worry about provisions. You don't have to make all these grandiose plans. You go in innocence and belief. And in 11, unto whatever city or town you enter, inquire who in it is worthy, and there abide till you go thence. And when you come into a house, salute it. And if a house be worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it be not worthy, let your peace return to it. The house or the person, what would make them worthy? Worthy is just someone who wants to hear. That's all that worthy is. Nothing more is required. But that they want to hear. They want to see what it is that you have. And whosoever shall not receive you, nor hear your words, when you depart out of that house or city, shake off the dust of your feet. You have nothing to do with it. It's none of your business. In other words, God has not prepared them to hear you. I mean, there's nothing going on, so don't worry about it. Forget it. Shake the dust off your feet. You don't curse them. You don't try and kill them. They're not an issue to you. You just go. Verily I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in that day of judgment than for that city. Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to the councils, and they will scourge you in their synagogues. You shall be brought before governors and kings for my sake, for a testimony against them and the Gentiles. Here's a critical part. You know, this part we may not see much. We may not be each brought before governors and kings and that, except in the sense that wherever you go, there's a governor and a king. In any community, in any group, in any gathering, in any small arena, there's a governor and there's a king. There's always leadership within an area. So you can look at it on the small sense or the grand sense. But in either case, when they deliver you up, take no thought how or what you shall speak, for it shall be given you in the same hour what to speak. That's the rest that you must be familiar with. Because if you're not able to stay in the rest in your life, then you'll be making up stuff. You'll be creating stuff out of your own mind to cover your shame and to fill up the silence and to not look like a fool. But you can be certain or positive that God will give you the words to speak at the time to speak them when you're in any situation, whatever it is. And let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. You don't need a bunch of verbiage, to fill up the air. God is able to deal with the silence. And when it's time to speak, speak. And when it's not time to speak, just shut up. And a lot of times for people who talk a lot, that's hard. People who don't talk, it's not hard, but then when it's time to talk, you got to talk. For it is not you that speak, but the Spirit of your Father which speaketh in you. And here's where some of the violence starts. And the brother shall deliver up the brother to death, and the father the child, and the children shall rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death. And you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endureth to the end shall be saved. But when they persecute you in the city, flee you into another. For verily I say unto you, you shall not have gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man be come. The disciple is not above his master, nor the servant above his Lord. It is enough for the disciple that he be as his master, and the servant as his Lord. Let me read that again. It is enough for the disciple that he be as his master, and the servant as his Lord. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more shall they call them of his household? Fear them not, therefore, for there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, and hid that shall not be known. What I tell you in darkness, that speak you in light, and what you hear in the ear, that preach you upon the housetops. Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father? But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. Whosoever therefore shall confess me before men, him will I confess also before my Father which is in heaven. But whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven. Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it. He that receiveth you receiveth me, and he that receiveth me receiveth him that sent me. He that receiveth a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he that receiveth a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. And whosoever shall give to drink unto one of these little ones a cup of cold water only in the name of a disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall not in no wise lose his reward. That's all of that part. That's a lot of There's a lot of words there. It's funny, over the years, so many of these things have been worked out in us, where we've had to deal with, do we love our parents? We love our fathers and our mothers more than Christ. I think around here, I think of it in terms of the body is the mother, and of course, God is the Father. And that's where our love lies. We love these people. We love the bride. But at any time when we put our eyes on ourself as something, then we've turned from God to, and we've turned the bride into something she is not. And our eyes always need to be on God. This is a conversation Pete and I had the other day about the bride and how two people relate to each other in a marriage. If you start looking at the marriage and at each other and that, you get consumed by focusing inward. But as you focus outward and you love God, then He works out stuff with among the people. I mean, that's how it works.
When he talks about these relationships, to me, he's always, the purpose of that is to, when I love my father, love my mother, it's not necessarily who they are, but because I'm their son. And so it's really about me. Mm-hmm. I love this person in this relationship because of who I am.
Yeah. It gives me identity.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
The freedom from that is to relate to whoever is a brother or sister in Christ.
Well, the freedom from that is just to forget who you are.
Yeah. And just be.
And then in that way, regardless of lineage, blood is manifest.
Yeah, it's almost like, what if you didn't have a name? I mean, naming things, we've talked about that. Ollie's taught a lot about that, but it just struck me. If we look at each other and we see, and oh, I call this thing over here Harry, and I call you Kevin, and this expression over here is Pete. And so by putting those words or that name on this vision I have, I can classify it, organize it, arrange it, and then I can relate to it in a way that may not be appropriate for the moment, because I put a lot of baggage to that whole thing, you know, and I've got a whole history behind it that helps keep it classified, and I'm wrong.
Your judgments are wrong. The inputs, the reading, the sensory input is wrong.
Because
the conclusion is wrong.
Yes.
It's all wrong.
It's not based on
this thing where he charges the disciples.
Mm-hmm.
And tells them to go to Israel and not take any supplies and not be prepared and not think about what they're going to say and do. It's just go. I mean, that's not just the charge to the disciples, and it's not just the way you live. It's every moment.
Yeah.
I come to you. I don't have any supplies. I don't have anything prepared. I don't know who the hell you are. I come to you a blank, open table, and you do the same, and man, yeah.
There it
God's
is.
God's there.
That's it. Hallelujah. I've never seen it this clear before, but this thing of, you know, getting rid of all the impressions in the past and the memories and the baggage of who you are, you know, when I look at you, or you, or you, or anybody. It's like then, it's only then are you free. And then God's alive.
The idea of traveling the world without baggage.
Yeah.
And without plans.
Yeah.
That's freedom.
That's total freedom. And then you're trusting that every person that you meet, God has brought to you, because you've made no plans.
You vice versa.
Right, you've given it all up, right. And so, and that's how we go. So the slate is wiped clean. You're not anybody anymore. Your history is, you are history.
There's no depression in that place.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, depression is just you thinking about your failures and your this and your that.
Fool sitting in the corner, chewing his own flesh.
Hmm. Well, that's where we stop. I feel so clean to be in that place. I guess that has to do with forgiving, but really just abandonment. That's part of what abandonment of self is, to abandon all the crap and the categorization of everybody and how you're going to relate to people and what you're going to be like.
There's nothing behind you and there's nothing in front of you. It's just...
It's here we are.
Well, the other place you're carrying around a dead body, so of course it's a burden.
Yeah.
And it stinks of unsanitary.
Unsightly.
How's John? Where's John?
He's getting ready for work. He's got to go to work.
Is he all right?
Mm-hmm. Is he okay?
Seems to be, huh?
Sounds like old age.
If anybody knows.
Well, it could easily be his kidneys, but that's what John's pills are for.
Anything else? From anybody else? Take a big guy.